Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
This is Gavin McLaughlin with you on News Talk's Taking Stock. We're joined now by Chad Bynan, a Managing Director and Senior Gaming and Lodging Analyst at Macquarie Group. Chad, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Gavin. Appreciate it. Great to be here.
Why was gambling illegal for the most part in the first place in the US? It always seems strange from here, where it's been pretty mainstream.
Yeah, so until about 3 years ago, sports betting was banned in essentially 98% of the United States. And that goes back to two laws, one that was passed in 1960 prohibiting betting across state lines. And that was really based on fixing horse racing or actually knowing the results of a horse race and then running the race across state lines at a bar or pub on a delayed fashion, and people already knew the results. So that was the 1960 Wire Act. And then in 1992, there was a small window that they could legalize sports betting, and that closed. So they essentially closed the window, and they never really revisited it. And then 3 years ago, in 2018, essentially what they did was they put the power back in the state's hands. So it became less of a federal issue, and if states found it useful to legalize, they were finally permitted to do it. And that's why we've seen just a flood of states. We're currently up to about 50% of the U.S. that have legalized sports betting and about 10% that have legalized iGaming. And we're years behind you guys and some other mature markets, but off to a great start.
Yes, you've mentioned a good few states have taken the leap so far. Do you expect basically all the states will follow?
Yeah, in our model, we do expect that about 95% of states will legalize sports betting and then eventually iGaming, which is betting on slot machines, blackjack, poker, et cetera. Currently in the United States, land-based gaming is legal in 42 of the 50 states. There are four major states in the U.S., which each have, you know, populations of, 10 to 40 million people. So those would be New York, California, Texas, and Florida. Those four states are currently all banned from legalized sports betting. So those are the big ones we're looking out for. We've seen legislation already this year for another, I'd say, a dozen states. And the big thing is states need tax revenues, and it's proven to bring in tax revenues thus far.
And COVID certainly provides an incentive in that regard now.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, land-based gaming is a big thing in the United States because it provides jobs, it provides tax revenues. There's really good, restrictions around problem gambling. And that's something that, we understand it in the United States, and we like it and we embrace it. And I think there was fear that legalizing online forms of gaming could take away from those land-based business models, and that could hurt jobs, hurt tax revenues. And that hasn't been the case. It really has been incremental. So I think it just took a little bit of extra time, and it'll take a little bit of political will to push some of these forward, particularly because of the COVID tax reduction.
When I was doing some reading before speaking to you, I came across this amazing story that the four major sports leagues in the US, American football, basketball, baseball, and ice hockey, they actually sued the state of New Jersey in 2012 over plans to legalize sports betting. And they said, among other things, that it would make people suspicious that there would be match fixing going on. Is their attitude the same now, do you think?
Those leagues have been big on trying to get what's called an integrity fee. So a fee on all of sports wagers that would go into a pool for those leagues to help curb or restrict any match fixing. What we've seen in the past couple of years is really just better data around what's going on in a game. There's a few major companies, Sports Radar, Genius Sports, and they actually have all of the data in every single game. So match fixing is becoming harder and harder. Soon they'll be tracking people's heart rates and, their just their performance throughout a game. And if anything, if there's any variance, there will be questions around match fixing. But to your point, I think the commissioners, the leagues, they've been happy to embrace this as long as they do get a fee. They've actually invested in some of these companies. Genius Sports, which I mentioned, just received an equity stake from the National Football League. So I think they have kind of changed their tone on this a little bit. But at first, I think it was really just posturing around making sure they benefit from this.
Yeah, well, it's a welcome additional source of revenue, I think, for them, especially when there are challenges around cable television. We're seeing that on this side of the pond as well, and you know, questions maybe over what's going to happen down the road with broadcasting rights. Obviously, a lot of companies based in the UK and Ireland are looking at this massive US market that's now opening up. Are there any operators that you think in particular are well placed to capitalise? For example, Flutter Entertainment, the Irish company, is one that there's a lot of high hopes for.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's from a stock valuation standpoint, the ones that have listed in the United States have certainly received a premium valuation compared to what they would receive on other stock markets. One company that we cover is GAN, formerly known as Game Account Network, and they were actually listed in the UK and Ireland, and they wanted to receive valuation similar to a software company. And they finally listed here, and they were actually able to get that, actually a doubling of their valuation, and the stock is worth twice what it was worth only about a year and a half ago. So yeah, there's certainly interest from companies like Flutter. Flutter is a massive conglomerate, and obviously with FanDuel being the number one market share company in the United States, there's certainly belief that if that was listed in the US, it could be as big, if not bigger, than DraftKings, which is currently worth $20 billion on a US basis.
Yeah, the FanDuel is a subsidiary of Flutter. It basically started out doing fantasy sports, fantasy American football, and have now expanded into betting, and very interesting business. But I see there's just been a departure there at senior level. What do you make of that?
Yeah, you know, we haven't had time to speak with the company. The timing is certainly very unique, because I think the conversations around a U.S. listing have been increasing over the past couple weeks. So not really sure how to think about that. You know, with any mergers, there are lots of other talented people within these companies. And, you know, the way that Flutter was created with acquisitions, you know, whether it was, you know, Betfair or PokerStars, and now FanDuel. We think there's plenty of talented people within the organization that could, you know, step in. But Matt King, the CEO of FanDuel's departure, certainly caught the headlines with everyone today.
Yeah, because he's obviously been a key player in driving the very strong growth that they've had over the last few years. Is there a risk that as this liberalisation takes place and gambling becomes more common and problem gambling inevitably follows, that there'll be a backlash like we've seen in some of the more mature markets? Because it is odd to see regulation increasing, say, in the UK, while at the same time, you know, it's opening up in the US.
Yeah, I think advertising bans and whistle-to-whistle bans, like we're seeing in other markets, as you mentioned, also in places like Italy, more restrictions in Australia, you know, that certainly is in the back of our minds when we think about stock valuations and the total addressable market for the U.S. Because right now, there's just an absolute marketing blitz going on. Companies like DraftKings are expected to lose about $500 million this year. And in any quarter, they're spending, you know, somewhere between $200 and $300 million. Currently, they look at customer acquisition cost, which is between $200 and $500 per customer. And the reason why they're willing to pay that right now is because they believe that the lifetime value of each customer could be somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000. If you implemented some of these restrictions that you're talking about, that lifetime value could go down. And obviously the acquisition tool of just marketing and acquiring these customers could change. So I think some companies, you know, are looking at this time as this is the time to build our business. This is the time to create our database, and they're just actioning on that right now.
Yeah, I see a statistic here that New Jersey permitted sports betting in 2018, and it's reported an increase in problem gambling since then to three times the national average. So I mean, this is bound to happen, Chad. There's no getting away from it.
You know, all I can go back to is the data that we have on land-based gaming, where in markets where there's actually a higher prevalence of land-based gaming, we've seen lower problem gaming and lower crime. And that's because the revenues that have been generated from that, you know, help enforce that in the security measures. You know, I still think this is something that, you know, will evolve over time, just in terms of opting out and setting limits and just knowing your customer in general. And I think that will change in the next couple of years. But yeah, the stat that you said is certainly, you know, not what we want to see in the gambling industry. This is something that should be more for entertainment value. Average bet size around $10 to $15, non-average bet size of thousands of dollars. And you certainly don't want to see people really jeopardize their financial wealth for some of these entertainment moments.
There's sort of an interesting dynamic being set up in terms of the battle between the big casino operators like Caesars, for example, who are trying to go after this in a big way. And then you have the influx from, you know, the international players like Flutter, who we mentioned, these kind of newcomers to the market, if you like, going up against these established land-based players. How do you think it's all going to play out? Do you think the land-based guys probably have a built-in advantage?
I think the land-based companies that have an omni-channel strategy can cross-sell to their databases. So Caesars, you mentioned, they have 60 million people in their database. MGM has roughly 40 million people in their database. Penn National, 20 million people in their database. And the reason why their databases are as big as they are is because, you know, these customers enjoy their land-based experience. I think MGM and Caesars' strategy of giving people a bonus or a reason to come out to Las Vegas if they lose money or if they're loyal to one of their online sites is certainly an attractive omni-channel acquisition channel. For the historical daily fantasy companies like FanDuel and DraftKings, there's no denying that, you know, their market share right now is well over 50%, if not 60% in some states. So that strategy of having the, you know, very engaged sports betting databases prior to the PASPA ban being brought down was certainly a great strategy.
What's the PASPA ban, Chad? Sorry.
I'm sorry, Professional and Amateur Sports Professional Act that was brought down 3 years ago. So that was essentially the ban against sports betting. And, you know, the third strategy is something that's a little bit more tied in with media companies, as you mentioned, companies like ESPN and NBC and CBS, these linear sports networks and linear channels are also partnering with online gaming companies as well. So the programming, the content, all of that will look much different during a live broadcast. And that's also a strategy. So those are really the three ways: the omni-channel land-based, the daily fantasy route, or some type of a media tie-in.
Obviously, as we mentioned, the market is opening up, but it is still going to be pretty tightly regulated. I'm just reading a piece here that says only a handful of operators will be allowed to offer online bets, and the tax rate on each wager could be as high as 50%. Obviously, though, despite that, it is a massive potential market, and there's a lot of companies looking to play in it. But I wonder, Chad, given what we've spoken about with the problems from COVID, states wanting to get more revenue, maybe there's a bit more of an incentive for them now to give out more licenses than otherwise they would.
Yeah, I agree. So in the states that have legalized, on average, there's been between 20 and 25 licenses. And the cost to enter a state actually isn't that expensive. But the states believe that this route is the best route to maximize tax revenues. New York just put through a piece of legislature that most people thought, you know, was not the best one to maximize revenues. And that would only permit two licenses in the market. And again, New York's a state with 20 million people, high GDP, high propensity to game. So that's certainly something that kind of surprised most. But I think a fair tax rate in the industry, you know, multiple options, just because people have different preferences in terms of what they like, that's the best way. And then from a tax rate standpoint, I think most U.S. states have looked at international markets like Ireland, like the UK, Italy, Spain, Australia, looked at what worked, looked at, you know, what permitted companies to still make money, invest in the business. And the EBITDA, the cash flow margins that we're seeing with these 20 to 25% tax rates are still in the 20 to 30% range, which allows companies to continue to invest, to continue to have a viable business, and to continue to offer, you know, a good product for customers.
Our guest here on News Talk is Chad Bynan, a managing director and senior gaming and lodging analyst at Macquarie Group, discussing the outlook for gambling in the US. And Chad, I suppose that the last thing I want to talk to you about is the cultural view of this industry, because we mentioned at the start, you know, that, that sports betting was illegal until quite recently for across most of the United States. Obviously now that's changing. But is there sort of a cultural distaste towards this practice? I mean, over here, it's seen as kind of a fairly mainstream thing to do. The perception I sometimes get as an outsider is that in the US, maybe it's a little bit different. It's seen maybe as, you know, maybe there's more of a stigma attached to it.
Yeah, in all of our surveys, we found that roughly 10% of Americans would be interested in participating in some type of gambling, where about 50% of Americans frequently watch sports. I don't think there's a major distaste. I think the big question is, will the broadcasting, will the content really cater towards the bettors? And, you know, if a team is down by 15 points with 3 minutes left, there might be kind of a change in terms of how the broadcasting is. Maybe it's more of a focus on, will this team cover the spread? Will over, under hit? And I think people don't want to see, you know, the integrity of the game and the integrity of that content really change that much. But I wouldn't say there's too much distaste towards sports betting in the United States. I think most people are embracing it. And then what we're also seeing is there's great cross-sell into iGaming, which is online, you know, slots and blackjack, which, again, on a land-based fashion has been around for decades. And I think that has broadened out the population base. That's certainly a lot more gender neutral, or maybe even favors more of a middle-aged to older female customer. But yeah, as of now, there hasn't been too much of a distaste towards the bills that have been passed.
Okay, we leave it there. Chad Bynan, a managing director and senior gaming and lodging analyst at Macquarie Group. Chad, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.